Welcome back, and joining me now for a closer look at the day's markets activity is Tami Netta from Shiloh Capital. Tami, thanks so much for joining us this evening. I was saying ahead of the break that we're looking at pretty muted activity across the board, no matter where you look globally, and that as investors await the Fed's announcement today, any clues as to, the where to from here is being sternly watched right now. Where are your expectations sitting?
Yeah, look, I think on our end, we are waiting for the Fed to give us a view on the interest rates feed into valuations. Valuations determine the way we'll be looking at going forward. I think in our view that the Rand is going to gain back some of its losses because of the view of inflation in the U.S. I also think that...
We seem to be having some technical difficulties with that line to Tami right now, so we're going to try and sort that out. While we do, Tami providing us with a bit of a segue into our next clip there, because the focus has been on the kind of activity we're seeing on the equity scene, yes, from a valuation basis and perspective, but also on the currency scene, and that exactly what Tami was touching on before the line glitched. We've had major currencies taking a bit of a breather, awaiting the Fed's next move. The US dollar continuing, however, to trade stronger, and this has boosted Northern Trust Asset Management as it believes that this dollar can be used as a hedge against rising inflation. So let's take a look at that before we get Tami back online.
We've been watching the dollar quite closely. It not only indicates that the Fed is making that relatively hawkish pivot relative to the ECB, for instance, but it also indicates, of course, that from an import price perspective, there is another pushback against the inflationary story that's coming through. And we think that's important because, yes, headline inflation in the U.S. is very high, but we also know there's still a lot of transitory stuff in there. I know that that word has been retired by the Fed. The Fed is under a lot of political pressure here, but we still think that that narrative of that inflation rolling over in 2022 is going to keep the Fed from getting too hawkish and too far ahead of itself.
We had this economic data out in the United States, November PPI. I mean, the biggest increase on an annual basis in about, on record to begin with. Wouter, in terms of what the Eurodollar markets are suggesting, they're pricing in Fed hikes of at least two in 2022 and 2023. We've seen that move a little bit in the last 48 hours as well. What have you penciled in?
Yeah, so we're looking at perhaps one, maybe two, but we're more in the one camp than the two camp, to be honest. And that's really because we think a lot of the inflation story is going to roll over, like I said previously. Looking at the PPI data, it's important to remember that, companies cannot just pass on these price increases. It's not that easy for them. And there's also productivity gains that they will try to use to offset some of these higher input prices. So there is a little bit of wiggle room there, if I may. At the same time, you have to recognize that there is a change in behavior from the Fed that's afoot. The political pressures are lining up. We've seen the statements coming through from the likes of El-Erian and Summers. That does make a difference, we think, but not enough for the Fed to really keep up with market expectations. And the long end of the curve, as you've already highlighted, is telling us that story too. And the long end of the break-even part of the curve, that's coming down, is also telling you that this is not an inflationary spiral story, at least not from a market perspective.
That was Wouter Stokenboom from Northern Trust Asset Management. Tami, let's bring you back. We're going to blame that little glitch on a very temperamental line to you over in Cape Town. But let's pick up where you left off, because, we had this conversation come through from our colleagues in Bloomberg, and that's where the focus has been, right? Impact on the equity scene for one, and you were touching on before we lost you there on impact on the currency scene as well and how that translates to a currency like the Rand.
Yes, so we must look at the Rand in terms of an emerging market currency. It's the most liquid emerging market currency in the world. So everybody who wants to bet on emerging markets can buy the Rand. Then secondly, we must look at the emerging market scene as a whole. There's high appetite for capital, low valuations, low capital inflows, and a great opportunity to make money. So in our view, we are pro value. We're pro emerging markets. We continue to be, and I think in the future, Rand will pick up, will strengthen, and the Rand story is not really the Rand story. It's more the dollar story. What's happening with the dollar, and more so the inflation in the U.S. side. And I think in the future will come right. Our view is hold the Rand, take valuations into perspective, and I think we'll be fine.
Okay, so that's some of the strategy Tommy is pursuing right now. We'll delve a little deeper in just a bit. Before we do, according to the Bank of America's December Fund Manager Survey, the more hawkish positioning by central banks has triggered somewhat of a defensive strategy coming into play, including a dash to cash. And Sanlam's Hannah Gooch-Peters seems to share that sentiment. Here's what she had to say.
I think the shift into healthcare is very typical, actually, because it's part of the market that is just slightly more protected, given its more predictable cash flow streams against the likes of inflationary pressures and rising interest rates, which people are really, really thinking about front and center in investors' minds right now. The move to cash, I can understand, given where we are with valuations right now. If we look at valuations in the US in particular versus, say, Europe, for example, we're looking at a 60% premium. They're very, very particular parts of the market there, particularly in the technology index, which has shown to be very vulnerable, in particular the last few days, that are looking very expensive based on a number of valuation multiples. So I can see why managers may be making that move to shift cash towards the end of the year.
And here's the point that you make, is that the U.S., as we go into next year, with a Fed, which will perhaps quicken the taper, this is your words, not mine. It's always great when I can attribute somebody else. It's unlikely that the U.S. will have the same ability to outperform Europe to the same extent as last year. So this is going into next year. That ability to not outperform, is that shaken by a faster taper and rate hikes, or is it driven by a different narrative?
I just think with the starting point in valuations, Manus, I think it's looking quite high. So if we look on a price earnings basis, the US is about 27 times on a forward price earnings basis. Europe's about 17. So I just think in order for that to continue to grow, to perform, I think that the valuations are already at a very, very high level to be able to move off that base. And so I think that if investors want to be able to continue to outperform the US, that emphasis has really got to be on good stock selection, to take advantage of opportunities where quality assets are being mispriced there. And we are starting to see some of those opportunities come up with this volatility surrounding the tapering and so forth that we're seeing.
Well, that was global equity investment analyst at Sanlam, Hannah Gooch-Peters. Tommy, that's the kind of conversation that's happening globally, and we're well aware of it, right? The extent to which valuations have been stretched, specifically if you're looking at something like the tech scene stateside. How's that translating to home ground, and what are you making of local valuations comparatively?
Yeah, so our view is that the tech scene in the U.S. is very different from where we are locally. Our ecosystem is different, whether we look at South Africa in general or Africa specifically. The valuation metrics are the same. However, the measure and how valuations are done cater for a much different market, different attrition rates, different client acquisition rates or customer acquisition rates, where individuals are still working their way towards digitalization. So I think in our side of the world, I think valuations are muted because we live in a capital-light environment, and that we're able to get companies that are very good, very valued, good cash flows, but at relatively decent price in comparison to the rest of the world.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, that theme has extended itself over our financial sector as a whole, Tommy, and today it was the financial index that stood as one of the green points at Capitec, amongst the top performers on the top 40 index with its 2.6% climb today. It says it's expecting a jump in annual profit, sees headline earnings per share rising by at least 75%. Your view of Capitec within that complex?
Yeah, look, Capitec is the maverick amongst the old boys, and I think they have figured out how to extract value from gaining new clients. We must accept that everything, like South Africa is an oligopolist environment. The four big banks hold a large percentage of the market. Capitec is coming in and they're offering different opportunities, different packages, different client services, and they're looking to extract value from those services. So I think Capitec is going to do well, but overall, I think also they've gone offshore, which is a good thing. But overall, I think over time, the oligopolistic nature of the banking sector will kick in.
Okay.
And those margins will begin to shrink.
Okay, so that one of the bright spots, one of the positives today, still a negative, Sasol, still the bottom performance top 40 index, close enough to a 4% decline on that share price coming through. I mean, is this still the effects of yesterday's operational update filtering through here?
Yeah, look, I think Sasol is in a difficult position in that they are not a new energy producer. So they pretty much depend on old energy coal to produce. So I think a large part of their portfolio is stuck in the old energy sector. So they'll always have problems in that regard. But I think in the future, as they continue to develop and evolve, I think they'll find new energy solutions going forward. So I think this temporary outcome must be seen as a blip or even a buy opportunity for investors who are looking to have a safe and reasonable size energy play. And then over the time, I think they're gonna diversify their views on energy and beginning to grow over there.
So are you buying into Sasol right now?
Yes. So we are shareholder. We bought it when it was a penny stock.
Who would have thought that you would have ever called Sasol a penny stock, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, but we've got to look at the asset base and what they're trying to do. I think over time they have to evolve to a new energy player. They've got to follow sort of Total with Total Energies and their Agri logo. I think they've got to go the way they've got to go a new way, and I think they have the potential to do that.
Okay. In the meantime, as you head off for your festive season break, Tami, or what are you putting in your Christmas stocking right now?
Right now, I'm keeping my money in my pocket. But if I were to be stretched to say, where can I put my money? It's two stocks. Number one, Coronation. They paid a good dividend. We are involved in that, so that's a good stock. And then the second is Renogen. I think Renogen is going to benefit from the new energy platform. I think they're going to rise and take advantage of this hydrogen and other alternative energy sources.
Okay, so two for the stocking there. Thanks so much, Tami, for having joined us on the line this evening. Of course, Tami Netta is with Shiloh Capital.